the school because some of the older chefs left the school, so they had to replace them. So he comes into the school, school
class. Yeah, and you became a very accomplished musician.
And he asked me, anybody wants to join the band?
Yes.
So my hand went up like anything.
And what band? What band did you end up in Ireland, Joe, in?
Well, I didn't end up with any band.
I know.
Because I progressed fairly well. Yeah. And when I was, I got my first principal job in a professional symphony orchestra
yeah,
in Budapest.
Yeah, of course you did.
When I was 20 years of age.
But didn't, didn't you end up in the RTE Symphony Orchestra?
And then I was working in the Budapest Opera House.
And then you came
RTE,
here.
As you remember, Lemas was the Taoiseach. And there was some money coming to Ireland.
Yeah, great.
And then and they decided to create a bit of an international standard to the symphony orchestra.
Wow.
And also Dustin Gabriel came back too.
But your son was up to quite recently a very prominent part of our music life here in RTE, and he's now isn't he director of the National Symphony Orchestra and the National Concert Hall? What an achievement! And what an achievement in Europe. He is very good, Joe. He is very good. Your son.
He is incredible.
Yes,
and he was one of the youngest members of the National Symphony Orchestra when he went straight from his leaving cert into the National Symphony Orchestra.
Brilliant. Well, you're incredible, Joseph. You're incredible as well. We'll talk to you again. I'm over time, unfortunately. That's Joe CBC. Henry, take strength, I hope, from a lot of the callers today. We still haven't sorted out the insurance issue for you. We sorted out an insurance issue last week, but that was a car. By the way, the car has been found and recovered, the Toyota car. But Henry, we'll keep in touch.
That woman here.
And you
I appreciate that, Joe.
Yeah, okay. That's the great Henry O'Brien, who's been... And this is going through a very traumatic period as a result of that freak accident. On McLaughlin produced. Anna Geary is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover our new autumn collection with fresh designs and cosy colours. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.
Thanks, Joe. Let's get the news at 3 now with Vivian Traynor.
Thanks, Anna. Good afternoon. Palestinian officials have said that more than 90 people have been killed and dozens injured in an Israeli airstrike on a residential building in the northern Gaza town of Beit Lahia. 20 children were among the dead. It comes amid international calls for the Israeli government to reverse a decision to ban the refugee agency UNRWA from operating in Israel. The Taoiseach Simon Harris has urged the European Union to review trade ties with Israel over what he called its despicable ban of UNRWA. Mr. Harris made the comments before meeting the incoming European Council President António Costa. The government is establishing a pilot scheme for reimbursing apartment owners who fix Celtic Tiger-era defective properties at their own expense. In January last year, the government agreed to establish a remediation scheme for apartments and duplexes with defects. Our economics and public affairs correspondent, David Murphy.
The total cost for repairing affected apartments is estimated at 1.5 to 2.5 billion euro. Much of that will be borne by the taxpayer. The total number of properties affected is estimated at up to 100,000. Problems include fire and structural safety and water ingress. Today, the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, announced a pilot scheme to repay those who'd fixed their properties already. Despite this first step, owners are still in limbo as they can't sell until the apartment blocks are fully fixed.
Gardaí are continuing to question a man in his 20s who was arrested in connection with the fatal assault of a man in his 40s in County Dublin. The man was found dead after emergency services were called to a house at the Old Bridge Park estate in Lucan yesterday. Sinn Féin has launched its party plan to address problems in the health system if it gets into government. The plan contains 350 proposals, 25 of which would be prioritised and involve the recruitment of 40,000 healthcare workers over 5 years. It would add 5.4 billion euro to the current health budget.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Self-building? Take efficiencies to new levels with a fully integrated Grant heating system. Think heating, think Grant. Visit grant.ie.
Dry apart from patches of light rain, mainly cloudy with bright spells, highest temperatures 13 to 15 degrees. That's all from the newsroom for the moment. Anna.
Thanks, Vivian.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Hello, hello. It is Anna Geary in for Ray this Tuesday afternoon and for the rest of the week. I am looking forward to keeping you all company over the next while. It's a short week, so it's good. You know, often the bank holiday lull comes, but it's okay when you know you've got a shortened week to look forward to. Though, there is a lot of parents right now going, we're on midterm. We're trying to keep them occupied while the teachers are going, ah, a week off. I'd love to know what you're doing. Like, how are you occupying the family? I don't know if it's just lately or if this is just a new thing or if it's always been the case, but all on my social media feed, pumpkin patches seem to be everywhere. Like, is this the latest thing? Is this on your agenda? Have you already been? Let me know. We're going to be talking about that actually in a moment. I just want to tell you what's coming up on the show because we have a great lineup for you. So Lucy Byrne is going to be in. She's telling us about an app that she's created exclusively for fans of women's sport. And the growth in women's sport has been exponential, but also the fans have too. And like, one of my pet peeves, I have to say, is when I'm trying to find results and I can't find them. So hopefully Lucy Byrne's app is going to be helping with that. So we could chat with her later on. Connor Pope, the guru, he is going to be in to solve all of our consumer queries. I always learn from him. We have live music as well in studio with America's Got Talent quarter finalist, the one and only Stephanie Rainey. She was incredible. Her audition has got millions of views online. You can check it out in the meantime, but you're going to be hearing her live. Not that long to wait for that. And we're going to be taking a trip across Ireland, haunted Ireland, with Kieran Fanning, who visits every county's spooky stories in his new book. And obviously, Halloween this week. It's a very appropriate time for that. But something caught my eye today. It was the journal.ie daily poll and it said, will you carve a pumpkin for Halloween? Now, I presumed a lot of people were into Halloween, but the poll results say something different. So 55.6% said no, no one in the house is carving a pumpkin. Yes, I already have is almost 20%. Yes, I will over the next few days. You don't have that long to wait now. That's Thursday. Is 12.9%. No, but somebody in the house will is 7%. And maybe I'm undecided. See, the undecided people mightn't get the pumpkin if they don't go out and get it today. But I'm actually curious, right, because I'm not a pumpkin carver. When is the optimum time to carve a pumpkin? Because I would imagine if you carve it too early, it's probably gone rotten by the time Halloween comes. But then if you don't put it outside, you know, to let everybody know you've carved the pumpkin or put it in the window, then sure, what's the even point of carving it? You can't put it up in the gram, you know, to let people know that you did it. I'm curious, is there people out there that are experienced pumpkin carvers? Let me know, when is the optimum time to be carving the pumpkins? I'm going to let you in a little bit of a secret now. Okay, I'm announcing it to the nation. Halloween for me has probably up until this year always been a time where I actively tried to plan and deliberately plan to not be at home on Halloween evening. Just because, and like, it's not that like I didn't want to be, you know, having the trick-or-treaters come to the door. It was more the panic and the sheer fear that I would run out of sweets and treats for them. And then what would happen if they came to the door and I didn't have anything left? But now I'm kind of, now that I've got a little boy, I'm reluctantly getting involved. I decorated outside the house for the first time this year to get into the spooky spirit and all that. And I even got costumes for my husband and little boy, matching costumes, might I add. Batman and Robin, very cute. Kev thinks he's going as Batman. Sorry, Kev, you're not. You're Robin. You're the sidekick. Ronan's the star of the show. He's Batman. So yeah, I can't wait. There will be photographic evidence, so Kev will probably hide from the camera at all costs. I don't think he even knew he was Robin, but surprise, that's who you're going to be. But I'm always curious to know around Halloween, do people even still make their own Halloween costumes? It's a big thing for a lot of people. Like, they plan their Halloween costumes for months and months in advance. But like, back when I was growing up, you got a black plastic bin bag stuck over your head and you went off out the door. Like, that was it. Whereas now it's, you know, it's taken things up a notch. Some people find it very intricate and they go to like great lengths to get the perfect Halloween costume. But are you someone that just makes your own, or are you scouring the internet for the best costume? And what about party games? Like, see, because I'm only getting back into Halloween now, do people still play party games? Or is it just all about the Halloween parties, you know, for adults, or the sweets for the kids?
Because I remember growing up, we'd always have the, you know, the string with the apple, and you'd nearly be taking a tooth out and you'd be trying to grab the apple or dodge it, as well as the case may be. And my aunt was actually only reminding me during the week about another one. I don't remember this one, but it's like a mountain of flour on a plate with a cherry on top. It's almost like Jenga, but just you'd have to use a spoon to take out spoonfuls of the flour. And the trick was to not let the cherry fall. And if it did, there was a forfeit. But I'd love to know, like, are those party games still going strong? Is there new ones I haven't heard of? Are they in vogue now that I'm just not aware of? Let me know what you're going to be doing for Halloween. Or maybe you don't even buy into it. You can let me know on 51551 or on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32, or the old-fashioned way, you can email Ray at rte.ie. There's going to be a lot of scary movies around the place all this week, of course. But I hope you're not going to be having any nightmares, and it's only going to be sweet dreams all week. And actually, that plays us nicely into our first song. It is Sweet Dreams by Eurythmics.
Sweet dreams are made of these.
Halloween song, but it's kind of got a, like a spooky vibe to it, hasn't it? There's texts coming in here. They're coming thick and fast. Boo humbug. Halloween, Pookoween. I don't carve pumpkins. I don't decorate. I don't dress up. I don't buy into the commercialisation of this ancient festival, Simon says. But I do watch horror movies and give healthy sweets to the kids that come a-knocking. Well, fair play. At least you're giving the kids the healthy sweets. I'd love to know what healthy sweets we're talking about here, Simon. Our producer, Grace, said that one of the kids used to come to their door, used to walk away and be delighted because, yes, I got grapes. So, you know, there maybe are some kids out there that are delighted with the healthy sweets, though I'd say a lot of them are probably throwing them into the hedge. But still, each to their own. Thank you so much for that text coming in, Simon. Now, though, brace yourselves because it is time for this. Oh, I missed that music. It is the Who Done It quiz. We are looking for two people, two of you lovely folk out there, to come on air today to answer three Who Done It questions each. Music, sports, books, maybe about Halloween. Who knows? It could be anything at all. And like all Who Done It's, there will be clues. So if you answer without a clue and you're feeling pretty confident, you get two. So that's 2 points if you opt for a more difficult option and don't take a clue. But if you want a clue, because it's easier, you still get 1 point. And we have a gorgeous prize. Wineport Lodge are giving the winner of our Whodunit quiz a chance to win 2-night escape for two people. So you'll stay in a deluxe Lakeview room with views over Loch Ree from your own private balcony, might I add, Switzu. Breakfast at your leisure each morning and dinner on one evening. This idyllic lodge is in Ireland's hidden heartlands and its renowned haven for laid-back luxury. Now, that's my kind of getaway. It's a little over an hour from Dublin and even less from Galway, so you'll be there in no time. You'll feel a world away from it all at Wineport Lodge, and you can get out in the fresh air of the surrounding countryside with a crisp autumnal walk. Maybe you want to cycle on their complimentary bikes or take a very refreshing dip in their lake if you're brave enough. For more information, visit wineport.ie. Now, to enter, you just need to answer this question. Which Cork actor stars in Small Things Like These? Cillian Murphy or Eddie Murphy? You can call us now on 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
If you ever have any cardiac concerns, like chest pain, shortness of breath, or palpitations, one concern you shouldn't have is where to turn for specialist treatment. BlackRock Health's Rapid Cardiac Care is a private, consultant-led service available in state-of-the-art surroundings at Galway Clinic, Hermitage Clinic, and BlackRock Clinic from Monday to Friday. Let us help you get to the heart of the matter. Simply walk in or call 1-800-911-985 or visit blackrockhealth.com today. BlackRock Health. Better together.
Maybe you're walking home with a guy you really like after a night in the college bar. Or maybe you and another fella are heading back to his in a taxi after meeting in a club. Or perhaps you've gone home with someone after a really great fourth date. There are lots of times and places where we need to say what we want and what we don't want. Whatever the moment, have the consent conversation. A message from the Government of Ireland.
At Energia, we know you want your business to be the business. The bee's knees, the cream of the crop. Energia can help you save big on your energy costs with flexible and competitive rates that really are the business. Switch at energia.ie/business or call 0818 36 3744. T's and C's apply. Energia. Think of the possibilities.
Discover Sentra Simple Savers, your go-to for great value this week. Save with offers like selected Cadbury and Nestle bar range, like Nestle Kit Kat, 3 for €5. Walker's 6-pack selected range, £1.50 each. And Carlsberg 8-can pack, £13.57 plus deposit. Sentra, live every day. Enjoy alcohol sensibly.
Hi there, Lorcan Murray here, inviting you to join me for some of the greatest music ever written, performed by amazing artists. My album this week is from pianist Daniil Trifonov. Everything from jazz to film music, Gershwin to Copland. And I'll be marking Maria Callas's Metropolitan debut. We've some ghost stories and mischief-making for the week that's in it, but no tricks, it's all a treat. Classic Drive, Monday to Friday, 4 to 7 on RTE Lyric FM.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, there is an air of spookiness all around, isn't there, this week? It's the season, really, for spooky tales. And considering Ireland is a nation of storytellers. We're very proud of that. And we've got a few ghost stories of our own as well. Now, joining him now is author Kieran Fanning, whose new book, Haunted Ireland, takes us on a journey through 32 counties and 32 ghost stories. Kieran, you're very welcome. Congratulations on your book, the eighth book. That's a pretty unbelievable feat.
Yeah.
How did you find writing this one?
I found it fascinating, just delving into all those old stories, exploring kind of old library books and the cobweb corners of the internet to rediscover lots of ancient stories and kind of retell them for a new audience.
Yeah. Now, to get us to that point and to, I suppose, delve into the book in a moment, let's kind of go back for a second, right back to your childhood where, okay, I suppose, your love of writing began
it
and was
probably
fostered.
Did, and a lot of inspiration for everything I do comes from my childhood. I suppose I grew up on a farm in West Wicklow. I was kind of a useless farmer as a kid, you know. I much preferred the world of the imagination and games and making up stuff and writing stories and drawing pictures and doing art. So I was kind of useless when we were covering silage bins.
That wouldn't be good for the agricultural life.
Yeah, there wasn't much use for being good at drawing a picture on a farm. But anyway, my parents encouraged me. And as a kid, I kind of wrote my own books, and I still have some of my books that I wrote as a kid.
Wow.
And that's kind of where it all started, yeah.
But I suppose growing up on a farm, even being out in the countryside, you know, that, I suppose, it provides inspiration.
It does,
and
yeah,
often a lot of writers will say being out in nature is actually really good for them.
And that
Did you find that vast
landscape, like, you know, just being able to wander out your back door in the morning and build tree houses and go in the river and make kites and play cowboys and Indians and all these things. Yeah. They were all fuel for the imagination.
So, you know, you could have written about anything. Like, what sparked your interest in old Irish tales then?
Well, I suppose a couple of years ago, I wrote a book for Scholastic, a book of myths and legends, mm-hmm, and fairy tales. So a lot of the old stories about the Two-Headed Danann, Fionn Mac Cuil, Cú Chulainn, all those kind of tales. And as I was doing those, I came across lots of other stories that couldn't have been included in the collection, old ghost stories and spooky stories. And I kind of put those to one side. And then the opportunity came up to write a book of ghost stories for kids. And initially it was supposed to be just a collection. But when I started to delve into it, I realised every county has loads of ghost stories. And we thought this would be a unique kind of angle to have an atlas of ghost stories, one from every county.
It's so interesting. And the book is beautiful. Like, it's a hardback book for people who haven't seen it yet. And it'd be even a coffee table book with a twist as well. Like, even the illustrations from Mark Hill, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautifully illustrated. Mark Hill, a Dublin illustrator, really suits the tone of the stories. They're kind of dark, gothic illustrations. And Gill, the publishers, have done a fantastic job of producing it.
And so how do you go about, like, researching for this kind of book? Like, where do you even start?
Yeah, well, I started with the one story that I knew, which was near me, which was in Wexford Loftus Hall.
Of course,
probably the
very
most
well
famous
known
one. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know a lot of them, but once I started into that story, it led me down little wormholes and little kind of avenues towards other stories. And one story connected to another. And a lot of the same types of stories were repeated. Like, even that Loftus Hall one is a typical dark stranger appears at the castle door and he's not all as it seems. And lots of counties have that same story, but just in different locations. Mm-hmm. So all of these stories connected, and it was really good fun kind of exploring all of these stories and trying to find the best ones from each county.
So for you as a creative, and obviously, you know, with a great mind for this, did you find that, you know, there's lots of different versions of these stories out there? And, you know, how did you find you being able to put your own stamp on those stories then as well? And maybe even correct a few inaccuracies that might be out there.
Yeah, yeah. There were, like, we have this tool called the internet that all of these stories, you know, these writers and storytellers didn't have. Mm-hmm. So there were lots of inaccuracies in some of the stories, dates that were wrong, place names that were spelled wrong. Even some of the Irish, a lot of these stories were written by folklorists like Thomas Crofton Croker and Patrick Kennedy. A lot of them didn't speak Irish, but they collected the stories from the native speakers and they wrote down the Irish as best they could, but it's often inaccurate. So I took this opportunity to correct it. And little thing, and I also added my own little touch. You know, every storyteller adds their own little piece on, and I hope that I've improved the stories a little bit, and hopefully other people years to come will read my story and add their own little touch to it.
I love that about storytellers. You know, we all have them in villages across Ireland where they'll hear a story but then they'll embellish it with their own.
Exactly.
You know, it could be like, oh, there was something happening in the town, and by the end of the day, you know, it was exasperated much more. They had put their own stamp, like a Chinese whispers.
Exactly.
Type thing.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, then when you're writing this and, you know, you're having to sit down and have a deadline. That must be challenging because, like you said, you went down rabbit holes. So, you know, one story led to another. Then having to try and put it all together is much more challenging.
It was challenging to have a deadline, but also very useful because this project could never end. You could keep doing it for your whole life. And so the other thing, it gave me a kind of a something to aim for. Mm. And also I had to choose a mix of stories. I couldn't choose 32 ghost stories. So in this book, we have monsters. We have Glenaid Lake in Leitrim. We have the Dovar Cú, which is a mythical monster from there. We have poltergeists. These are ghosts that you can't see that make sound. Polter comes from the German meaning to make sound.
Yeah.
And we have the poltergeist in Cúnin in Fermanagh. We have witches like Alice Kittler, the famous witch from Kilkenny. We have the banshee. There's a banshee stories in lots of counties, but the one I chose was from Antrim in Dunluce Castle, famous there from Game of Thrones. And there's a banshee that haunts that castle.
That's so interesting.
And we have, so I had to choose a variety. Mm-hmm. They're not just ghosts, you know. We've got Marjorie McCall.
There's something in there for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah,
even
yeah,
if you're not into ghosts, you're okay.
Exactly,
there's loads of things.
Yeah.
I suppose really, I was listening to John Creedon talking about this actually recently, but you know, the lost art of passing down, you know, whether it's our folklore or our stories, because we are a nation of storytellers and sometimes those stories can be lost in other countries. And we have such wonderful stories here in Ireland that you'd love to make sure, like with a book like this, that they move on and they move forward with the next generation.
Exactly. You know, like we have a huge mythology that is relatively unknown in Ireland, like the two-headed Annan stories and all those gods. You know, we have Nuada and the Morrigan and the Dauda, and these are amazing superhero gods that Marvel, if they found out about them, would be onto them in a shop. But they're kind of hidden, and in a way I like that, but in another way I would like more Irish people to know about them. Mm-hmm. So it's wonderful to be able to retell these stories and bring them to a new, fresh audience.
Have you always been a fan of Halloween and spooky stories?
I have, yeah. And yet I'm a real scaredy cat. I like the thought of being scared, but then when it gets close to me,
so
I like to back away.
So you had to write these stories as a scaredy cat.
Very but interesting. There's something about a scary story in a book form that's kind of easier to handle for a kid, especially than a movie, because in a movie, you're looking at somebody else's imagination. Someone else is making the pictures. But in a story, you're making the pictures yourself. And if it gets too scary, you can just close the cover or you can turn down the scariness of the picture in your mind. You know, you're in control when you're reading a story.
I love that. And of course, you know, you're talking about kids. You had great soundboards because as a primary school teacher, being surrounded by kids, I would imagine, were you able to test some of the stories?
I used them as guinea pigs, so I tested lots of the stories because we had debates with the publisher over, oh, this is too scary or this is not scary enough or kids won't like this. And often stories that we thought were really good, the kids liked them, but they often preferred different stories. So sometimes the real test of a story was only in the telling, when you tell it. And there's a couple of stories that I tested out in my class last year and they absolutely loved, and others that maybe they were a little bit ambivalent about, but it was a great to have them as a sounding board.
I love the honesty of younger people.
Oh,
you know, because they'll tell you if they don't like it, but equally they will double down if they do, and they'll read a story over and over again. And I suppose the creativity then that comes naturally from children. Did you find even that you got some ideas from them?
Yeah. And like one thing I do a lot with kids is creative writing, and all of my students write their own book when they're in my class. So my current class this year, I have third class, and they're all preparing to begin their books. So they write books on all sorts of topics, fiction, non-fiction. They might write about their grandparents or a made-up story. They illustrate them. Mm-hmm. We get them printed in America and they come back posted to the school, and then they read each other's books and leave little comments. So it's lovely to be able to pass on that, my own passion for book writing, to kids, you know.
Yeah, and as you said, it just stimulating their imagination because it's so there. And I suppose one of the things that I was reading earlier that you said and I loved is the idea that in kids' books, you know, they'll accept that anything is possible in stories, where sometimes as adults, you know, if a flying horse is there, we're probably a bit more reluctant to accept it as part and parcel of the story. But just the wonder and the magic that kids have around stories, it must be great to be able to write
for
that.
And it's brilliant to be able to live in that world. As you say, like, kids will readily accept a monster that walks in the door, but it's much more difficult to sell that in an adult book.
Yeah.
You have to work much harder. So the world of children's literature is open to anything, and kids will buy into it very quickly. And people often ask me, when are you going to write for adults? And I say, why would I want to write for adults when I can write about this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, and I suppose that, like, the fact then that you're immersed in a world where you're getting the feedback from younger kids and you're seeing the impact that it's having on them. As you said, like, you know, if it ain't broken, don't fix it.
Exactly, so, yeah, yeah.
What about your own kids? Like, are they interested in what you do?
They kind of are. They were more interested when they were younger, but they've got their own kind of lives. But they are probably interested. They just don't want to tell me. Yeah. That wouldn't be good for my ego, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We can't tell dad that we actually like what he does. Yeah,
but they're kind of very creative kids, and they're big into drama and music, and it's a creative kind of house, you know?
Mm-hmm. What would you say to people that are even listening to you now, that, you know, love the idea of being able to write a book? And maybe they have, like you said, there's so many different things out there people can write. What's the hardest part of actually sitting down to start to write it, do you think?
The hardest part is probably perseverance, and you just have to persevere. It's a really difficult industry. It's difficult to get published.
Yeah.
It's difficult to finish a book. It's difficult to rewrite a book over and over and over and over again. Like, the one thing you don't realise when you read a book is you're going to have to read that book about 40 or 50 times and rewrite it that same number of times. But the joy of seeing your book on a shelf, or seeing a kid reading it, or somebody coming up, or someone contacting you and say, I love this story, I love this book, it makes it all worthwhile. But it is difficult. But I'd say the one key tip I would give would be to persevere.
You have a story in there, and of course, as a avid GAA fan myself, I can't leave this one go. There's a story about the hurlers, the ghosts. Tell me about this one. Like, you, I mean, would it not be Ireland if they wasn't?
It's in County Kerry of all places, which are more famous for their football.
But they have a good pocket of hurling now back there as well, to be fair to them.
Yeah, well, this is the ghost hurlers of Rean. And Anna, you've seen a lot of hurling matches and camogie matches. You won't ever have seen one like this. This takes place on Loch Lane, one of the lakes near Killarney, beside Ross Castle, which was once owned in the 15th century by a chieftain there who was an alchemist. So he dabbled with alchemy, trying to find the elixir of life to gain immortality.
Don't we all look for that every now and then? It's the potions that we're looking for, isn't it?
And he discovered it seemingly one day, and he drank this potion, and then he got onto his white horse and disappeared under the lake. And he's supposed to rise every 7 years on May Day. And the story in the book is about a farmer who's out minding cattle beside the lake one May Day, and who arrives only this chieftain on his white horse. And he sends the farmer off on a message to County Waterford, to a neighbouring lake, with a message that let's play a match. And before the farmer realises it, there's two teams playing hurling. They're all skeletons. They're all dead people from hundreds of years ago. And they're playing hurling on the lake, with either side of the lake used as the goalposts. That's the hurlers of Rean.
That story would come to life. I could imagine, like, you know, parents reading that to their kids, or, you know, even kids reading it themselves. Like, that just jumps off the page, kind of a story.
Yeah, and like, that's a relatively not scary one. It's kind of a humorous one. Like, they're knocking each other's skulls off, and, you know, the ball is bouncing.
So it's very real life then, is
exactly
what you're telling me.
Yeah, no helmets needed. But it's good fun. And then there are kind of darker and more sinister stories as well. So there's a nice mix for everybody.
Yeah. So what's next for you then?
Well, next, I'm now immersed in this kind of world, and next is something similar. I can't really say what it is, but it's more dealing with older kind of two-headed Annan stories and more magical stories. So kind of older stories, more mythological stories about the first people that came here. Like, the two-headed Annan came, landed in Leitrim, and according to mythology, they were our first people, and they gave us our love for magic, our love for spirituality, our love for storytelling, and the kind of unique thing that makes us Irish. So that's kind of what I'm working on. Something similar, another collection of old tales.
So another opportunity for you to go down rabbit holes.
Exactly,
and go.
Disappear.
And you mentioned libraries. They really helped you to write this book as well.
Oh yeah, the libraries are fantastic. Like, I live in Navan, and we've a brilliant library, and you basically can go into any library in the country and order a book from any other library in the country, and they will drive a van up with your single book in 2 or 3 days and all for free. It's amazing. And some of the books I borrowed were really rare books from the archives, books that would cost a couple of hundred euro to buy, and yet they're sent in an envelope up for you to read, and it's just incredible. You know,
shout out to all the libraries across the country and all
the
librarians
are so great. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Did you have to, like, how did you have to treat the rare book? Because you often see that in movies, don't you? How they handled? Were you wearing the gloves?
Well, it arrived in an envelope, and it gave me no instructions to handle it carefully, but I did. You know,
you did,
I realized
you did.
The value of it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Not only in monetary terms, but in terms of what it meant for our legacy and our stories and our kind of history, you know.
I just find it all fascinating how, you know, our history is in these books, and, you know, the likes of you were moving them forward. You know, you're putting your own stamp in them. You're bringing them into modern day life. You're allowing a new generation of people to read and learn about these stories, maybe talk to their parents about them, who might once have heard when they were kids. Yeah. And, you know, it kind of creates this connection. Often we forget as Irish people how proud we should be of that folklore and the mythology around it. But it really is brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And like, you look at all the tourists that come here for that. You know, Americans come by the thousands for this kind of ancient mythology that we have. And sometimes in our own land, we can forget about it. So it's nice maybe sometimes to just put away the phone, sit around, read a story like the Shanachies did in years gone by, pass it on to someone else. Something lovely and simple about a good story and letting your imagination do the work.
Well, I was talking earlier on about party games. Maybe that's what people should be doing at Halloween parties, is taking these stories and sharing them. Maybe you can do it by candlelight, make it a little bit spookier. Kieran Fanning, thank you so much for coming in about your new book, Haunted Ireland, an atlas of ghost stories from every county, and it is available in all good bookshops now. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to be talking about women's football right after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.